Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, March 4th. And this week is Staple Weekend.
Yes.
It is Saturday and Sunday.
That is big stuff going on.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff, because we're also doing, we just finished our inventory and we're tired.
And also our comics are coming in late.
So Wednesday is going to be a crazy morning pull, but as of last week, hopefully we'll be invisible to y'all.
Yeah, but unless you happen to be here right at 10 on Wednesday when you can see us scrambling like ants to finish, it will be completely invisible to you, or unless there's a box missing, which hopefully won't happen.
We may on Wednesday, though, look like panicked Muppets.
Yes. Yes, a little bit of that. So this week when we do comics talk, we're going to talk about last week's comics.
Right.
Which hopefully next week we'll be able to talk about both this week's comics and next week's, because maybe we'll get back on our regular schedule and won't want to murder everyone at UPS.
It sure would be nice.
Yeah. But their Staple's exciting. We've talked a little bit about it, but just to last minute wrap it up, it's a two-day event. This is the 11th year. It's got 150 vendors from around Austin and Texas, Houston, Dallas regional, who are different creators of small press comics, that kind of thing, as well as 3/4 of the Lumberjanes creative team, Babstar from Batgirl, Jess Fink, Kate Leth. And I want to quick throw a shout out to our buddy Nate Bliss, who you may have seen his Doctor Who prints here on our store.
We've carried them for a while.
He's going to be selling those at his table. As well, he's got this awesome sketchbook that he's done called Rock Apocalypse, where it's sort of a post-apocalyptic setting. And he's done all these various characters, anyone from the Runaways, you know, did the song Cherry Bomb.
Right, not the comic Runaways.
But to James Brown,
Jimi Hendrix, Johnny Cash,
as sort of these post-apocalyptic warriors.
Yeah,
and he's got this whole thing in his story in his head.
Inspired by like Six String Samurai.
I think that is some of the inspiration with Six String Samurai.
It was a cool. It's such a great set though. As his Facebook friend, I've been watching each new one pop up, and it's always a blast to see him.
So yes, definitely go to check Nate Bliss's table. That is definitely a thing I'm making a beeline to pick up on Saturday. I will be there both days helping run Babtar's table. I believe Dave and Nick will both make appearances.
Yep. We'll be there at some point for sure.
So come on out. It should be a really good time. It is always a good show. Then again, our stuff. Next week, Martin Day, March 9th, will be our ladies' night over at Outback Steakhouse. Next Tuesday, Astro City will be our reading with Rogues on Tuesday, March 10th, over at BJ's Brewhouse. Then the next week, Monday the 16th, we will have Ticket to Ride with our Gaming with Rogues over at BJ's Brewhouse. And we've got a couple more announcements to make as far as events
going.
Was
ladies' night in there somewhere?
Ladies' night was in there.
I wasn't sure.
Dave just sort of blanked out as I talked.
I did blank out. I'm like, this business is old.
That was the first thing I said. Tabletop Day is Saturday, April 11th, which also happens to be Nick's birthday. So when you come in to play games, wish Nick happy birthday. Say, I'm sorry, you have to work. We are going to have people demoing games. We have just put up the schedule on our Facebook and our website. It's a bunch of old favorites as well as some new stuff. And there will be promo cards and stuff to win from the tabletop crew. It is just a good day to try out board games and card games.
And in the off chance you're listening to this and you've never seen the Tabletop Podcasts, that's Will Wheaton's awesome tabletop gaming show where they do a little half-hour distillation of what a game is about. You get to watch him and some of his celebrity friends play it, and while you learn the game. It's super fun.
It's fun. I like them a lot.
And they're just big boosters of the industry. They sponsor this yearly event, so that's really cool.
I particularly recommend the Pandemic episode, which has Ed Brubaker in it. The Last Night on Earth, which has Garfunkel and Oates, the singing duo. Yeah.
What was it that they just had that had Alan Tudyk?
And Forbidden Desert with Alan Tudyk, which is great. So much fun.
Yeah.
All of those are good. I haven't actually watched all of them, but the ones I've watched have been great. So the schedule for that is up on our website. And also, closing out that day, if you want to come and try to see if you can take us down, some of the management, at least me, possibly others, are going to be here starting at 6 for a Geek Out tournament. There's a game called Geek Out. It is a trivia game we carry.
It's kind of a... What'd you say? Like you I don't want to say bid for.
You do sort of bid. Like the categories are all like comics or games or whatever. And the question might be name 4 Avengers. And then you say, I can name four Avengers. And the other team goes, oh, well, I can name five Avengers. And then it goes to the point where someone's like, I can name 20 Avengers. And you're like, okay, do it. And if you do, you get the point. If you don't, nobody gets the point.
Right. The main thing is, whatever you say you can do, you got to put your money
you
in your mouth.
Eventually, you're going to – yeah, you can bluff. Yeah. If you can bluff someone into going higher than they can. But it's – so, yeah, the notion is that the Rogues managers, anywhere from me to possibly me and Dave to possibly me, Dave, and Nick, will see, depending on schedules, will be taking on all comers and geek out.
Yeah. And we'll crush you.
And we'll crush you. We will crush you.
Actually, so Randy, you've done it before, and I know that you dominated pretty well.
Yeah.
My fear is that despite having a decent bit of knowledge in here, that I can't draw it up very quickly, that it's going to just get all jumbled in the middle of this. So I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be good at it.
We'll see.
Nevertheless, I will crush them.
As part of a team, I believe you would help crush them.
Is that the plan? That they will? It'll be teams?
It'll be everyone versus the Rogues, yes.
I like it.
That is how we're closing out Tabletop Day this year. Then we have a demo. This is on March 27th on Saturday of a new game called Double Vision. It's a former UT grad or a UT grad, former UT student, who is putting this game in production. I believe his Kickstarter just ended.
Mm-hmm.
He has demo copies of the game, which actually look pretty sharp. It is sort of a combination. I want to say Red Dragon Inn with a little bit of Monopoly and Trivial Pursuit thrown in. It is a game where you play people out drinking on New Year's Eve. It is not a drinking game. Like, your characters are drinking. But you go out and you take drinks, and your characters take drinks, and you have to do bar bets and this kind of stuff. It seems like a really fun, entertaining game. And the creator's going to be in the store demoing it for people. So should come out for that. It should be fun. It's ahead of the release of the game. It's just to get a look at it. And that is on Saturday, March 27th. All this stuff, as always, all our events are on our Google Calendar, hopefully. We try to keep that updated. But they're definitely on our Facebook page and our website. All that information is there. There is a lot of stuff coming up March and April. And, of course, we are heading into Free Comic Book Day before too long, too. So lots of stuff coming up at the store. We'd love to see you guys at some or all of it. And now we will get on to talking about the various news for the week.
Looking at our list, it looks like a lot of stuff.
So we'll start on a sad note.
Everybody knows about this if you were on the internet or just kind of generally pop culturally aware that Leonard Nimoy passed.
At the age of 83.
Which is a pretty good run.
The guy had a good run, and he did a lot in his lifetime. Everything from, Fringe, of course, Star Trek. Yeah. He had some music in the 60s, which some of it is hilarious, but if you haven't seen his Frodo Ring.
Bilbo Baggins. Yeah.
Sir, look up Bilbo Baggins and Leonard Nimoy. You're in for a treat.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
It's amazing. And, you know, he also got to be in the new J.J. Abrams movies.
Yes.
He sort of passed the torch to the next generation.
And he did photography.
Mm-hmm.
He famously wrote books. He was sort of philosophical.
Yeah.
He was a guy who seemed to basically embody the best of his character. Like, he was a thoughtful, kind person.
You know, one of the things that I can sort of enjoy, even while being sad, to have lost such an icon. And to me, that was like... You know, Spock as a character is got to be like one of the great characters of the 20th century.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the top 10 or 20, I mean, of the great fictional characters. And he got to be that. You know,
yeah.
He embodied that. But what I was going to say is, like, everybody was – there was an outpouring of love that
Yeah.
day, you know?
Yep.
Like, and so, although sad, it's neat to see somebody – it's cool to see somebody who's going to be so fondly remembered – and, you know, probably – I imagine his family got to see a lot of these things. A lot of tributes from, you know, coworkers and, you know, I saw Will Wheaton. The president.
Yeah. We finally have a president who appreciates geek stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So while sad, it was, you know, it was a life well lived, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, and well liked.
Also interesting, of course, because one of the most characters' most famous scenes was a death scene in
Star Trek 2. Yeah, oh man.
So a lot of people were reposting that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a heartbreaker already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I also reposted though his Star Trek 3 revive him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a sweet scene. I found a photo of that when he comes back and all the rest of the cast, and he sort of like takes him a few minutes to sort of remember things. But then when it begins to come back, you know, Scotty and Uhura and Chekhov and Kirk are all there, and they're all kind of embracing him.
Yeah.
And it's a sweet picture to sort of remember him by.
Yeah. Moving on to less important news, probably, but still the world spins on. They have cast the we don't know who they cast bet, but Supergirl cast former Superman Dean Cain and former Supergirl Helen Slater.
Dean Koontz, right?
Dean Koontz, yes. The speculation, of course, is that they are some form of parents, either the Danvers, her adoptive parents, or maybe playing her Jor-El Kryptonian parents. Not Jor-El.
It'd be
her Kryptonian parents.
Yeah. Who are her adopted parents?
The Danvers.
Sometimes, right?
It's not the Kents.
But, I mean, traditionally, isn't it?
In the animated series, it was the Kents. Previous to that, she's always been Linda Danvers.
Oh, right. That's right. I don't know Supergirl backstory that long.
I didn't either, because I was thinking it was the Kents, but only the animated series did that. And I liked that. I was kind of hoping that's what they'd do. But because they're basing this someone on the post... like Peter David's Supergirl, who was Linda Danvers and that kind of thing. They're giving her the Danvers.
It seems like they kind of want this to stand alone, a little bit separate from Superman. And so I think that's a good call.
Yep. By the way, why doesn't DC put Peter David and Gary Frank's Supergirl into print?
Yeah, Gary.
This
Frank
would be a good time
nobody.
For it, and it was a very offbeat, unusual take on Supergirl.
That's
I've not read all of it. I only read parts of it. I would love to get all that in collections.
You know, the Supergirl show is a little ways out, though. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they...
I bet they'll get around to it.
So it was Dean Cain, and who was the other? Oh, it was
Helen Slater.
Helen Slater from the 80s.
In the movies, in the movie.
You know, Dean Cain, I believe, has gone on to do a lot of rather schlocky TV after Lois and Clark.
Yep.
But I really always did like his portrayal of Superman, and I like DC's general trend of homaging the classic actors who sometimes in their time... weren't necessarily appreciated.
But they were carrying the torch.
They were carrying the torch, and they deserve a tip of the hat now.
You know, and Marvel's done that, too. Marvel had Lou Ferrigno in the Hulk movie.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Then they tend to nod toward the people who played these characters, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's nice to see people acknowledging. Since the comics industry is not great about acknowledging older people.
Not great about it. Maybe that's, you know, that's something. The industry has been improving in some nice ways in the last 10 years. I know creators are more likely to find better deals now. Women are definitely becoming a bigger part of the industry. That would be a nice other thing for it to happen soon, is more acknowledgement of creators as they age a little bit.
Well, Flash has done it completely.
Yeah, Flash is using John Wesley Shipp.
Oh, yeah. No, I guess what I'm talking about is the comic creators themselves.
The creators,
yeah. You know, there's, I know that there's like great creators, like one of my favorite guys, John Ostrander, who had medical issues and really had to kind of struggle. And he's just one of many.
Yeah.
Steve Gerber, and I know a lot of others have dealt with serious medical issues. And
Norm Breitfogel, the artist from Batman.
Yeah, right, and oftentimes they have no insurance.
Yeah, well, because that's not the industry we're in. And that's becoming less of a thing with people getting exclusive deals. That's why you see a lot of people making these exclusive deals.
Yeah.
But it would
be nice to see before these guys get into too deep to see some more help for them.
Yeah. So there's also some more casting news that the CW has announced that they're going to do a show, or they're at least developing a show, with Katie Lotz, who plays Black Canary and Arrow.
Oh, right.
With Brandon Routh, who's playing the Atom, although it's a weird version of the Atom.
Yeah.
And with Wentworth Miller, who's playing Captain Cold.
Is he a likable Atom?
Oh, he's great. I love him. He's just more Iron Man-ish so far.
Right. I think part of the thing is, like, I was thinking the other day, I don't really know what, like, Atom's personality is in the comics. I've seen him a handful of times, and other than being the science guy, I don't know what his deal is.
Well, here's the thing. He's playing a very likable version of the character, but
he's like a millionaire.
He's playing Ted Kord.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be Blue Beetle.
That's right.
Then there was a Booster Gold thing in development, so they took that away.
Yeah.
And he feels so much like Ted Kord. I mean, he's having a relationship with Felicity, which is very much like Ted Kord and Barbara Gordon's sort of flirtation.
Sure.
And I really think that this was supposed to be Ted Kord. It feels like Ted Kord.
Yeah.
And so I'm always a little
people
bummed.
People do like the character, though.
Yeah, no, so it's a good version of the character. And Brandon Routh is great.
So is this going to be like a team-up show? I was under the impression that maybe there were even going to be other characters coming.
They said three more characters we have not seen on TV yet.
But are they going to be like some kind of weird team? Or is it going to be like this week it's the Atom and Captain Cold, and next week it's Firestorm and somebody else?
Oh, yeah, Firestorm. I totally forgot that they also cast half of Firestorm.
He is going to definitely be in there.
Victor Garber, but not Robbie Amell. He was not listed in it.
Who's Victor Garber?
Victor Garber is Stein.
Oh, weird.
So that doesn't mean that Robbie Amell doesn't have a deal, too. It may just be that his name was not as known.
Yeah.
But it could also be that they're going to bring in Jason Rush, or they're going to do something different. Who knows? But yeah, I forgot about Firestorm. But the weird thing is, when I first saw this, I was like, okay, what's Captain Cold doing in this mix? there's an Arrow spoiler here, but there's a reason it seems weird that Katie Lotz is there. But I can see easy ways they can get her back in. But Captain Cold, I was like, what is he doing here? Because it doesn't seem like a Suicide Squad type take.
He's a charismatic villain, but it'd be weird to see him with a hero.
And so I started thinking, what if he's been cast as like one of the main villains?
Right, like
that he's makes the more sense. He's the recurring villain. And yeah. I'm like, that makes sense because he has shown himself to be a good bad guy.
Right, well, and I bet they come across and put some other villains in there. Sure. I mean, they have to. So,
but people were speculating. I believe I said they should call it the Outsiders. And Nick originally quickly disabused me of that notion because he said
Brave and the Bold.
And I'm like, yeah, that's what it should be called.
Yeah, it seems like it's the team-up show.
Yeah. If they do that, that would make me so happy.
Yeah.
And I think this may be the CW acknowledging both how successful Arrow and Flash have been, but also how limited their programming time is. They only have about 8 hours or 10 hours a week to cover. Right. They don't program all day. They don't program on weekends. They can't program too much or they get more restrictive FCC rules. So this is why Fox doesn't program as much. Fox programs about the maximum it can possibly do.
Yeah.
Because any more, then they got to deal with all the rules that CBS and ABC and NBC do.
Right.
So I think that probably this is their way of saying, okay, well, we want to do more superhero shows. We want to cover all this ground, but we don't want to launch like three new shows. So why don't we do one team-up show and then see what works from that? And I think that's really smart.
I think it's a good idea. You also just – I mean, you don't want to like – you don't want to have so many superheroes out there that, you know, you get too big for your britches.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen in comics. We've seen
smaller
companies start up like CrossGen that very quickly expanded their titles so quickly.
Nobody could keep up. Yeah.
The thing is people wanted to, though.
Yeah.
And I like the DC TV verse. I'd like to keep up with it.
Yeah.
If it was five shows, though, I'd probably
it's gonna be a lot harder, yeah.
Well, I think the article even stated that it was sort of a drop-in. They're not even going to do, like, a pilot to test. It was going to be for next season.
Yeah.
That they're already kind of green-lighting this, fast-tracking it, which is pretty awesome.
Which they should. I mean, it's been – this has all been very successful.
So I have a question for you two guys. Yeah? What three characters do you think – the new ones would you like to see?
Would we like to see or we think – because I bet one of them is Vixen.
But they said new to it.
And she's on the – well, she's on the web.
She's on the web.
But the web is part of the TV-verse.
But it's not counted. It says have never been seen on TV before.
Yeah. Right, but that could mean she'll show up later. I do think – I think she'd be a good
character. I think she's a likely one. Yeah. I think they're laying groundwork for Vincent.
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
I still think Blue Beetle, Booster Gold.
Yeah.
I'd like any of those. I mean, they're possible. Since that fell through.
I would like to see Hawkman or Hawkwoman.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I bet they could do the CG for it pretty they could well do it. Now.
They did Hawkman on Smallville.
Yeah, they did.
I wouldn't be surprised to see something from the Mystical Universe, whether it's Dr. Fate or something like that. I mean, that's all tied up in Constantine, but Constantine may not come back.
Right.
And Zatanna showed up on Smallville at one point.
Yeah.
But not the greatest version of it. So, I mean, Zatanna could be an easy one.
Yep.
I want to do Mr. Miracle.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Well, if they did Mr. Miracle and he actually had his sci-fi ties, he could be an interesting sort of way for them to begin broaching it sort of in the same way that the Marvel movies kind of did small incursions into space before Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, he could say, like, and he could just sort of allude to, he's like, I'm from a place that's kind of bad. You know, you don't know what it is, but eventually you get this some kind of cool scenario. It's like, we got to do a prison break on Apocalypse.
Right, right.
How cool would that be?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who they're going to have, and I don't even have a lot of favorites in my head, but I'm very excited by this show. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
I'm also happy that it's the same team. It's still Greg Berlanti. It's still all those people going to be running it.
So yep.
They have definitely made sort of a home at the CW, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. One final bit of TV news, and there's not much to this, but if you haven't seen him floating around, they have shown a picture of Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. And he looks good.
He looks really good.
He looks intimidating and a little terrifying. Nick was wondering if, since we know we're going to, this one led us to wonder if that's going to cross over in the movies at all, because he's a Spider-Man villain.
Sure.
And do we know 100% for sure we're seeing Spider-Man at this
point? We don't know for sure.
Okay. But assuming we do somehow see him in the Civil War, then it would be interesting. It opens the door now that Spider-Man could also interact with the Kingpin in addition to Daredevil, who kind of usurped him. And I was thinking, I would like to see Spider-Man get trashed by the Kingpin. I'm like, just to show that, you know, how much he can be underestimated. I like the Kingpin as a physical threat, without powers.
If I had to guess, I think we'll see the Kingpin trash somebody pretty well in Daredevil.
If I had to guess. Pretty good guess, that'll be the lead character.
In comic news, Battle Chasers has raised its head again.
Right. Tentatively, and who knows how it's all going to play
there's
out.
There's
no
dates.
Like a groundhog seeing not quite seeing its shadow.
For those who don't know, Battle Chasers, like over a decade ago, was it?
Yeah.
Was a famously unfinished comic that only made it, like, what, 8 or 9 issues in?
Yep.
But it was a fantasy comic at a time when there weren't a lot of fantasy comics on the shelf. And it was by a very hot artist, Joe Matarera, who drew and maybe co-wrote it with somebody.
Yeah, I believe that's the case.
And it was very much in the model of a Final Fantasy or the other Japanese role-playing game, video game
style. A lot of bulky, exaggerated anatomy.
Yeah, giant weapons and all that
giant
stuff.
Giant boobs.
And a hugely busty character.
Yep.
But it definitely made its mark. We still get people sometimes wondering if it's available, if it ever finished.
Yeah.
The answer is always no and no. So he's talking about doing a thing where he finishes out the first one and will occasionally do a mini-series.
Well, he famously left to do video games.
That was
his first love.
Right. Joe Matarera.
He basically abandoned comics.
While a talented artist. Seems wildly flaky.
And he kept coming back.
Yeah, he's come back. He did that run on Spider-Man.
Yeah, he came back for a few things.
He did Inhumans for
a couple
of
issues.
No, he did it for like 3 issues. It's become a running gag that if Matarera is doing something, he's only going to do it for a few issues, and then he's going to flake out to do video games.
Yeah.
This
is supposedly going to tie into a video game.
Yeah, he wants to do a video game too, which actually makes it more likely to happen.
Right. But still take it all with a grain of salt.
There's no dates
we don't have.
To
we can't put you down for it on a subscription yet.
But
we'll let you know when we can if it happens.
We'll keep a watchful eye.
What I'm hoping will happen out of this, and not for me, I was not a big fan ever.
But just as a counterpoint, I recognized at the time that this was no great comic, but I have a fondness for fantasy and for the Japanese RPGs,
yeah.
And so I kind of enjoyed it as a comic book angle on that. So I would I'll probably check it out if it happens.
And a lot of people loved it, and it's just a shame that even though it was unfinished, there's so much of it, and the art is really nice, that he should at least have a trade paperback available for people who want to read what there is.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping the minimum we get is that this stuff is finally in print again.
That would be nice.
Because that really seems crazy to me that when people come in like, do you have Battle Chasers? I'm like, I don't have any of it. I can't have any of it. And it doesn't seem right. It's like at least it should be available. Even if it's unfinished.
Yeah.
Finally, we got a bunch of new X-Wing minis this week. Nick, take it away.
Oh, yeah. No, finally, we see a third faction sort of come into the fray, the Scum and Villainy faction. So there's 4 new ships.
Scum and Villainy kind of encompasses, like, bounty hunters
bounty hunters
and all that stuff.
So it sort of starts with the most wanted pack, which is these bounty hunters and whatnot taking over a couple of headhunters. You get 2 headhunters, Z-95.
Which is sort of the proto X-Wings.
Yeah. The proto X-Wing and a Y-Wing and sort of new paint jobs, new schemes. And
it's essentially like pirates repainted them,
right.
Modded them.
But it also comes with new tags and stuff to convert a few other ships as well. So
that's very
it's
cool.
Sort of the starter set. And then they've got the IG-2000, which is IG-88 ship.
It looks cool.
Very cool. We have the M3A Interceptor, which is sort of a smuggler ship used a lot by the Hutts as a transport fast,
when Han Solo can't hook them up.
Correct. And then the final one is the Star Viper, which is
Prince Zizor's ship.
Yes, Prince Zizor's
from Shadows of the Empire.
From Shadows of the Empire.
That, I was never a big Shadows of the Empire fan. But man, does that ship look cool.
That ship is awesome. when I saw it originally, just the photographs of it,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know. It doesn't look for me. But when we got it in the store, I'm like, man, does this look awesome.
It looks cool.
I want to put it on the field and just see what it can do. Because it looks pretty tough.
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, if you've been enjoying the X-Wing game, these are just more things to enjoy. And
we also got a huge restock.
We did get
finally.
A huge restock, thankfully. And hopefully we'll see that happen more. But, we got more, Rebel Aces. We got more of the different various TIE Fighters.
Everything's coming up Star Wars.
We got all the X-Wings. We got most of the TIE Fighters. We've got no Y-Wings or B-Wings or A-Wings. Those are still out.
Unfortunately, those are still got.
But we do have, like, the Rebel Tinted 4. We've got the Star. We've got several starters. So if you're wanting to dig into this game, definitely.
There's lots to choose from.
Yeah, it's available now. And that will be one of the games we're going to demo at tabletop.
We still have do we have the starters now, did you say?
We do have the starters.
And the starters at least have X-Wings and TIE Fighters.
Yeah, it comes with 2 TIE Fighters and 1
ground
X-Wing.
Floor stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So that'll wrap us up for our news and intro and after stuff. We'll be back in just a second with our new reader questions segment. All right, it is time for reader questions. This is our new segment that we hope to maintain weekly, but you all got to send us questions. So far, we're 2 for 2.
Yep, yep.
So you can always send us questions at roguesgallerytx.com. roguesgallerytx@gmail.com, excuse me. roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. You can also ask them on Facebook if you want to go to our Facebook page and post a question for the podcast.
And if we use yours.
And if we use yours, you will get a special comics pack selected by our staff.
Yep.
The first one went out to Steve Maggi this week for his question last week. This week our question comes from Joseph Halbert, who is one of our regular customers.
Yep.
And he will be getting a prize pack possibly this week, possibly next, depending on when we put it together.
We'll try and get to it quickly.
His question this week is, hi, gang. Sometimes fans make the jump to creators. Have any of you ever written comics or books? If so, do you recommend any particular methods of printing or publishing? Have any of your customers written anything we can purchase or read? Several questions there.
Yep.
First one is, have any of us ever done comics? And the answer is yes.
Yes, indeed.
First, I did – before I got married, I was friends – when I was back in my reviewing days, I was friends with Jay Torres, who is currently, I think, writing the Teen Titans book. And he was doing a bunch of small press books, and he did an anthology for Slave Labor Graphics called Love and Tights, which was romance superhero comics. And I did an 8-page story that was about a superhero wedding that was – the artist was – I'm blanking on his name. I want to say it's Steve Remen. But it was a book that I – it was the first script I ever wrote. And I was cautious about some things, like not trying to do someone picking up and hanging up a phone on the same panel or anything impossible like that. Right. But I did pack probably 22 pages of story into 8 pages. And he had to redraw – like he had to redo some of the story beats and that kind of thing to make it work.
Did you ask him to like draw the Super Bowl as the stage event for the wedding?
Nothing that bad. Nothing that bad. But I was just – I had too much going on.
Yeah.
It was an overly complex story for a short story. And but it turned out pretty good, large part thanks to his work on the art. I still have the original art. My wife got it for me as a wedding present. And I still have a few copies of the issue, I think. But – that was my first foray into comics. I got paid nothing.
Yep. I don't think you would say that any of the efforts we've made have exactly been commercial successes.
No. The second foray into comics, I also got paid nothing.
Yes.
As did my collaborator, Dave, yes. Mr. Dave Farabee.
That was me.
I learned that Dave could draw. This was early on when we were working together, I think. We were still at Dragon's Lair.
Yep.
And
and we also did a few. We did one or two pitches for Marvel.
Yeah.
That did not get picked up. Then they later went on to do something kind of similar, but sucky.
Yeah, we did a pitch. We had a pitch for AIM that was sort of a workplace comedy that I still think is good.
Yeah, that is AIM as in Advanced Idea Mechanics. They're evil science terrorists.
I actually pulled out that – I don't know if I still have it, but I pulled out that pitch somewhere recently and I looked at it and I'm like, this was good. This was a good pitch.
Yeah, we had like a script for the first issue and a outline for a 4-issue series.
Yeah, it was a good pitch.
It was good stuff.
But we didn't know any
Marvel.
We didn't know anybody at the time.
We'll never work in this town again, Marvel.
We also we were at the wrong time in the industry. They were looking for movie type realistic stuff, not MODOK as the wacky boss type thing.
Yeah.
Now I think it would be much more likely to happen.
Yeah.
We're not going to dust off that pitch though.
No.
But we also did a small press comic with a friend of ours named Rob Turnage. He was doing an anthology book that he wrote a couple of books, autobio comics.
Yep.
And then we did a short sci-fi story.
The project was called After the Facts.
After the Facts. And the story was called, do you remember?
Nope.
I don't either.
Right. But it was a sci-fi kind of...
It was a sci-fi. A starship had been attacked and these two crewmen were trying to make their way to the escape boat. And there was a twist ending, very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little O. Henry sci-fi short story. Crudely drawn in the style of a caveman by myself.
The art was probably better than the writing.
You know what's funny though? One of the things I remember about this, and this, you gotta have a tough skin.
Yes.
By the way,
yeah.
Which I did not have a tough skin at the time, and I was also sort of a slow and flaky artist. Although it was a fun project, and we went to San Diego and sold some of the booth,
yeah.
And that was fun. And I did sketches for people, and that was all cool.
Yep.
But you know what I will always remember is the rather crushing review that made its way out from a comics pro, Stephen Grant, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Referred to my artwork as like caveman-like or whatever it was he said. But, you know, I wouldn't have... I was in a review group at the time.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't have... It wouldn't have killed me so much if I had seen it. But a friend who was in the review group with me, this was like a dozen people that were my close online reviewing buddies.
Yeah.
He said, he's like, oh, hey, Dave, did you see this review? You got trashed. And I'm like, if you had sent me this as a private message, it would have been fine. But kind of doing it in front of all my friends, yeah. I felt terrible about it.
Yeah. The next question is whether we recommend a particular... No, Nick, you do not have any...
No, I can't throw it on this. I've never collaborated or done any comic work.
I will say that probably anybody who has ever read a comic, and certainly anybody who works at a comic shop, has probably at least thought about it.
Sure, like, of course. He says, if so, do you recommend any particular methods of printing or publishing? Now, that we can't particularly speak to. We had someone who published both of those things. It wasn't right. We weren't self-publishing. I will say that
still small press efforts.
Yeah. I will say that if you want to know about that kind of thing, that is what Staple is ideal for.
Yes.
Like, that is going to be everybody who
there
prints.
There are going to be like 100 experts there yeah. that day.
Yep.
And not just like one way of doing things. Yep. There's going to be
there's also a printing company that has been doing the programs for like 5 years,
yeah, yeah.
And they set up every year. EC Printing, I think.
Yeah.
So you could go and talk to them. So if you are in fact interested in this in more of a theoretical level, I would go to Staple and go talk to EC Printing and go talk to some of the creators and see what they do. There's everything from what Nate Bliss is doing, where he's hand stapling his own sketchbooks.
Right, that is sort of the classic.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get a product out, if you want to have like a sort of proof of concept that, you know, it's like, here, I can do a comic.
Yeah.
I can have a finished product, and it may not be like a refined piece when it's put together, but, you know, hopefully the interior content's good.
Right.
And all that stuff, and you can have something to hand to people.
Yeah. There's also web comics, obviously, is a good way to get yourself out there and then go toward printing later. And then, of course, there's the pitching things to Image, which at this point you basically got to break in at Marvel and DC and then go to Image. So.
Although, you know, there are a lot of people at Image who are not necessarily huge creators.
It's true, yeah.
I think if you have a strong enough project,
yeah.
I think you can sort of skip the line, but you got to be pretty good.
But self-publishing in the industry these days, I don't know that there's a market for it, to be honest.
It's rough. We have tried doing that a little bit at times, but don't have a strong audience for it at our store. So unfortunately, we're unlikely to be able to like carry a lot of product like that.
Yeah.
Sadly, I don't feel.
Yeah, like, we'd love to sell
like,
it. It's just
I feel like the audience right now is not particularly receptive to it. The 90s were a good time for that.
The audience out there for self-published work is at the conventions, at the small press shows,
like, and also I think online.
Yeah, and online. Yeah,
there. You know, that's where you know. Cyanide and Happiness and a million other great online comic strips have been birthed.
Yeah.
You know, Penny Arcade and everything.
Yeah, sure.
XKCD.
Bluff.
That they could they can sort of choose whether they want to print or not.
Yeah.
And they don't, but they don't have the expense of printing.
Yeah, I definitely
not out of the gate.
I definitely think for self-publishers right now the best idea is to make a webcomic and then make your money off of merchandise and direct sales kind of thing and advertising. That seems to be the best way to do self-publishing these days. And then get your name out there. From there, you can move on to doing books with bigger publishers.
Or if you're super awesome, go to Image.
Or if you're super awesome, go to Image. finally, last question. Have any of your customers written anything we can purchase or read? Well, yes. Matt Frank, of course, is the artist on Godzilla.
Right.
Yeah.
Over the years, we've had any number of customers
yeah.
who've done it, although some of them are not necessarily in our area anymore.
Yeah. We've had a lot more customers who work in game design.
Right.
People who worked on the Laundry RPG or sure. I forget what other games. He's moved to Germany, but Jason Drawl had a ton of stuff that he's done.
Yeah, yeah. I'm suddenly blanking, but...
Dan, our former staffer, worked on a lot of games.
Yeah, Dan, our former staffer, worked on Battletech.
I want to say like Shadowrun,
yep.
maybe
yeah.
some Battletech
yep.
stuff.
Yep, and then we have customers who are – they're not like regular customers, but they're people who live in town for like Mark Mazur, the guy who does the Fluffy Bunny Tea Party game.
Right.
Which we carry. And Paul Hanley, who's Doctor Who prints
Doctor
you've
Who
seen.
Prints.
And Tim Doyle, who runs a print shop locally and does prints, and you've seen all those in our store.
Ken and James. Who's done the game art for the game Red Dragon Inn.
All the Red Dragon Inn art. He is doing video games now, actually.
He also does his online comic.
He does an online comic, Mohagen.
Yep.
And he's working on a Kickstarter, which we're going to be carrying, the ABCs of Cthulhu, I believe.
Yeah, yep. I've seen the preview art I've seen for that looks brilliant.
Yeah, so definitely we have a handful of people out there. We don't have a specific, like, local artist section or anything, partly because we just don't have any room.
Yeah.
But we do carry some stuff from local people.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Joe, for the question. Joe, Joseph, Joey, I don't know if any of those are names you hate. Sorry.
Johan.
but thank you for the question. You will find a bonus pack of comics in your file sometime soon. And if any of y'all have questions for us, you can send it to us at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. We'll also try to start remembering putting question posts up on Facebook every now and then. And
you
we'll
like
be
soliciting them on Facebook?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we'll be back in just a few seconds with our comics talk for last week. All right, this is comics talk for the week of Wednesday, March 4th, sort of. Except that it's actually...
We're traveling a little bit back in time.
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. UPS is terrible. And most of the drivers are okay, but...
The drivers are fine.
But if you know any UPS executives, you're like having a dinner party, go ahead and throw a drink in their face and set them on fire. They have delayed our comics. Last week it was delayed somewhat due to weather, but also incompetence. This week it is delayed due to weather and union issues. They're not allowed to unpack the comics despite the fact that they are here.
Yeah.
So for 2 weeks in a row, we were pulling comics Wednesday morning last minute. And we're not happy about it. Like I say, hopefully you guys won't even notice the difference, except that we will all be more stressed.
It's just, it just adds stress to us.
Again, we'll look like Muppets.
And also, we can't do the podcast. We can't talk about books we don't have. So we can't talk about, say, Princess Leia number one and how great we expect it to be. Well, how great we expect it to be, but we can't tell you if it is.
Or All New Hawkeye.
Or All New Hawkeye. Or any number of books.
Or Spider-Woman number five.
We're going to have to put those on board next week and instead this week talk about last week's books.
Yes. Fortunately, last week was a great week for comics.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And a couple of these books are already gone. We'll be talking about second printings when we talk about them. But we're going to open by talking about a book we've mentioned before but keeps needing to be mentioned. And Dave, that is S.H.I.E.L.D.
We're, what, 3 issues in now?
Yep, 3rd issue.
It's an interesting format because every issue so far, I don't know if it's always going to be this way, but every issue has been standalone, although there is a developing backstory.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the focus of the
book. Right, which I like. I'm a person who likes a great standalone issue.
Yeah.
Mark Waid is one of these guys who knows how to pull that off. Certain guys who've been around in the industry a little bit longer tend to, I think, be best at it.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best.
Yep.
And this issue was a really fun one that had mystic threats in it.
Yep.
Essentially, what happens is Agent Coulson, who's more or less he's the star of the book.
Yeah, he is.
And it's essentially a team-up book where he brings in various superheroes. In this case, it's Spider-Man.
Yeah, based on the threat that is occurring,
yeah.
He picks the hero that he knows will be the best.
The ultimate fan's dream. You get to know the superheroes best, and you get to call them in, and they team up with you.
Yep, yep.
Well, in this one, it starts out with him in his flying car, and Spider-Man's on the hood.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It's right there.
Yeah. And they're on their way to Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yep.
His Greenwich Village sort of, what is it? It's not a mansion. It's like a townhouse.
It's a brownstone.
Yeah, it's like a brownstone, yeah.
I hope that's in the movie.
Where Doctor Strange, now I read this last week and I forget one or two of the specifics, but Doctor Strange is out on
a
mission.
He's out, and there's a home invasion.
Yes,
I love this.
Yeah, somebody has broken in, and basically all hell is breaking loose because like magical traps are going off. You can't go in because there's like spells on the doors.
Yeah.
And they
put mystical artifacts all around that you don't want to touch.
Exactly. And so it seems like, well, what would they bring Spider-Man in for? And Spider-Man has some misapprehensions at first. He's like, let me get this door open for you with my super strength. And like, he can't open magic. And they're like, well, we know how to get in. But they're like, what we need is your spider sense.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's going to be so unpredictable and weird in here that we need somebody who can basically tell us when to jump. And
he's
basically
a mystical radar.
He's a mystical radar. And there's another guy in here who's remanded to S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. He's an old mystic villain who I've never seen before.
Never heard of him.
But I suspect it was probably a C-list villain from Doctor Strange.
I'm sure Mark Waid read it at some issue growing up and wanted to use him.
Yeah. His name is sounds like the kind of name that you gave Russians back in the day. He is Pavel P. Rasputin. it's like all the Russian names we know. And he seems like sort of a low-level sorcerer, but they're sort of doing a, you do this for us, help us get what we need taken care of inside the house, and you'll have your sentence commuted to time served.
Or yeah. Like what they do with the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Suicide Squad kind of deal. And I don't want to, like, get too into how things play out, but of course, there is a question of how much this villain is with it will on their side.
Right.
But I, what I wanted to say about the villain is what I really liked about it is that this guy is a no-name villain.
Yeah.
Nobody would care. They could have killed him off on page one just as a joke, and nobody would have particularly cared.
Yeah.
But instead, Mark Waid does something cool with him. He makes him interesting throughout the issue. And it was more like he was building him up so that, in a way, like I feel like he would be very – he could be usable afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I like best about Mark Waid is he doesn't believe in breaking the toys.
Yeah.
In fact, he will rebuild them better than they were before.
That's true.
And Alan Davis draws the issue. Alan Davis, who's been a great artist since, what, probably the 70s, at least the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would have been my first choice for the issue. Like, I think I might have preferred somebody else for the Mystic stuff. But he's a great storyteller and artist in general.
Yeah.
I like how he draws Spider-Man, though.
He's good with Spidey. He's good with action in general, you know. He was the guy who influenced Brian Hitch.
Yeah.
But he has a little bit more of the old school superhero in him, along with some of that realism. But anyway, a fun Mystic issue, you know, and just filled with fun ideas as you traipse about an evil trapped magic house.
Yeah,
all three so far have been fantastic.
This is a really good series. We still have all three issues. It is definitely worth picking up.
And the person who's going to be in the next
is
issue is we just know from the preview of the cover that the Invisible Woman.
Is going to Invisible be Woman for S.H.I.E.L.D., which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And the one after that I'm excited for is Scarlet Witch.
Nice.
You know, Scarlet Witch is a character who has been through some rough times in the last decade or
but
so.
I feel Mark Waid.
Right. So this is why, like, when I was talking about him building characters up again, I feel like even though it's just going to be a standalone issue, he could end up doing more for Scarlet Witch in that one issue than has been done for her in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's true.
Where she's mostly been portrayed as a breaking down psycho.
I'm really looking forward to.
So what else do we have?
Nick, what's your pick for this week?
Some week. It is what I will be talking about now, which is The Savage Sword of Criminal, which is kind of a fun title, but it is a one-off single issue of Criminal.
Ed Brubaker's realistic crime series. But
they're putting out because Marvel or the Image is now doing Criminal reprints.
Right.
They're reprinting all those traits. And by the way, I'm a huge crime fan. I'm a huge Brubaker and Phillips fan. I love these books. If you've never read them and you like crime comics at all,
the hilarious thing about this is I haven't finished Criminal. I've read the first two volumes, and I loved those first two volumes, and then I kind of fell out of that criminal that kind of crime book vibe,
crime mode.
Yeah,
And I know you love them, and
I never fall off crime
you've
mode.
Read most of them,
I've read
right?
most of them, but I definitely like kind of. I have to wait for the mood to strike, too. And then when I do, I'll, like, read five in a row.
But
I'm always in the mood for crime.
But
That's
I was
great.
Right when I opened it, I mean, there
well,
is
we
actually...
have to say what this looks like.
Well, I want to get to that in just a second. There was a cool connection to, actually, the second story, which is probably far my favorite story, the Lawless story.
Yeah.
And this character, the main character of this is actually that character's father. Which I thought was a really cool connection.
The series in general has neat connections like that. You know, sometimes it'll jump around in time, like show like some crime going on in the 70s, and then they'll cut to something that's in present time, and you'll be like, oh, that's the grandson of this guy who was a low-level criminal, and now his son has moved up in the ranks.
And you don't have to know all of it, but it's kind of cool if you do.
Brubaker really formulates this in sort of interesting ways that they are interconnected, but you don't need to read any of them. You can read just the single one.
So you, having only read the first two volumes and sort of knowing the basic concept, were able to jump in on this.
Yeah,
special.
And the main reason I read this one is the format of it. It is done in the sort of Savage, sort of Conan-style book, the 70s era.
The magazine style.
Now, I should say, there was a regular edition of this that didn't have all the back matter and is just like regular Criminal size. We didn't order it because... Because
if you're going to buy this, this is the way to buy
it. It's...
The cover looks like a Savage Sword of Conan from the 70s with, you know, a gleaming muscular hero and a beautiful girl swordswoman beside him.
And that's sort of the thing about this focus.
It's even got fake weathering on it, you know, so it looks like it's been in somebody's garage.
I mean, the back cover actually has sort of a shipping label to an actual, like, to the character from in prison.
Right.
Because that's where he's reading it.
And an ad for the awesome secrets of deadly kung fu.
And banish all with these moves of the pressure point belly ruptor and the ninja eye gouge.
Yeah, right? there are spoof ads, letter columns, and everything in here, as if it was a lost piece out of the 70s.
And the cool thing is, it's two different stories in ways. There's basically the 70s era Conan story that is being told
go ahead.
Well, it kind of feeds he's reading. He grew up. He loves this comic, the main character. Okay. That is sort of what he reads.
Okay.
So he's got a subscription in prison, right?
Yeah.
Or it's from the prison library,
maybe? From the prison library.
Yeah.
But he reads it outside. This is something that he has always done in his life.
Yeah.
He's read this book. So you're getting snippets of that while you're also getting a story of him in prison and the reason for him being in prison and things like that. And it's really, really great, just simple story. And Brubaker and Sean Phillips do an amazing job with it. The dialogue is fantastic. It's violent. They do a thing with a comic book I never even considered of. And it's gory and, wrong.
I'm scared.
But I also want to say that...
Is that Sean Phillips on art?
It is Sean Phillips.
Yeah, he does both stories.
Well, the interesting thing about Sean Phillips is... and. I love Sean Phillips, don't get me wrong. I think he's a fantastic artist. But sometimes I think a lot of his characters seem similar
in
other stuff, like Sleeper and things like this.
Sure.
And in this one, he has so many different styles in this book. Not only is the traditional criminal style, he does the Conan style that it's kind of craggy and it's nice. But and then he also does, there's a sequence of a acid trip. And I think the sort of I think Dave pointed out it's very sort of Mobius.
Because of the coloring style, it looked a little bit like the other big magazine of that era, Heavy Metal.
And
it had that sort of the coloring.
I can't find it right now, but it's really, I was very impressed with the different styles that he used, and I mean, I thought it was amazing. And there's just all the Backbender stuff is fantastic, because not only is it, you know, Phillips and Brubaker, they called in some friends, like...
they do a letters column, and Kurt Busiek has a letter.
Kurt Busiek does, but I know Chip Zdarsky was huge in the creation of sort of this magazine format.
Yep.
I think it's probably commonly known that Kurt Busiek used to write a lot of letters to comics,
but
that's sort of what they're goofing on here. Yeah. They're like... They have a letter from him as if this has been a series running, you know, since forever. It'd be like a letter to Conan in the 70s, but using the fictional conceits from this very comic.
But also, you know, Gary Duggan, who's been writing the Deadpool book, Kieran Gillen. I don't know who Mike Drucker is, and I know that I'm dumb, but... And also Kelly Sue DeConnick, so...
Yeah.
It's, you know, really
Mike
just
Drucker,
sort of...
I probably isn't related, but I have to
Mort
kind
Drucker.
Of wonder if there's any relation to... Yeah, Mad Magazine's famous caricaturist, Mort Drucker.
But like Randy said, Image now has this, and they're putting out a new trade paperback of all the stuff that they're bringing over from the Icon line.
I believe they're two volumes into their printing.
They
are. This would be an excellent time to get on board. Coming.
Exactly, and really, I wonder if they'll ever redo the hardcovers, or if
they might
just going to let those.
I don't know.
Because Image does amazing hardcovers.
But the thing is, you don't have to read any of the criminal.
No,
you can just read this one shot and see if it's up your alley.
But I'm going to say, if you read it, you're probably going to buy all their other ones.
Yes.
Because it's that good.
It's really good. finally, we have the book that you all have been we've all been talking about, Spider-Gwen number 1. This book is sold out already. We ordered what I thought was a pretty obnoxious number.
Obnoxiously high.
And still was not enough. We have a second printing coming in about 2 weeks, so we can still order it for you. And I was very happy with this first issue of Spider-Gwen. This was, of course, the big – it was Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, which introduced a universe in which Peter Parker became the Lizard and Gwen Stacy became Spider-Man, basically. Spider-Woman. But
am I correct, Randy, that Spider-Verse issue went through 4 printings?
We're coming up on 5.
And that'll be a little bonus thing for people to get that I would highly recommend.
So that was a single issue story, and it was so beloved that there was actually, you know, they say because you demanded it and it's never true. That's actually true for Spider-Gwen.
This is actually true.
They were not planning to do this book, and then the demand was so huge, and cosplayers and custom action figures like Nick built And right, all this sure stuff.
There's been some good fan art. We talked about the Batgirl Spider-Gwen
fan art last week.
That showed up last week.
Led Marvel to fast-track a comic, which is finally here. It's by the original creative team of writer Jason Latour, who you may know as the artist on Southern Bastards.
Yep.
And artist Robert Rodriguez, who is just a great artist. He's done a bunch of, I remember some Oni stuff, I think. But basically, she's got this awesome costume with the hoodie that looks really cool.
Yes.
This issue is, it's the introduction of Spider-Gwen as an ongoing. So she is a vigilante. The police are unsure about her. And, but her father, the police captain, knows that she is Spider-Gwen.
And, you know, there's also some, like, world-building stuff in here. You kind of find out other differences between their world and ours.
Yep.
Like, there's a certain police officer who
plays yes.
I mean, I kind of liken it to sort of DC Elseworlds in some ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
it's a reminder that DC should be doing Elseworlds.
Because you can have sort of, you know, just that kind of fun with the yeah. stuff.
I don't think there's any... Is there any harm in saying who the police officer is?
It's Frank Castle.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of somebody else.
Who else are you thinking of?
Isn't there? I was thinking Ben Grimm showed up somewhere in there.
I don't remember that.
I thought there was a Benjamin Grimm who was mentioned as a police officer.
If so, I missed that.
Okay, well, I'll double check it later.
Her father has been demoted, and the new police captain is Frank Castle, and he's clearly going to be at odds with Spider-Woman, which is kind of fun.
Which, like, the DA is, like, Foggy.
Yeah, Foggy's the DA, and Murdoch, Matt Murdoch is a different status quo in this world.
Yeah, hugely different.
That's really interesting. The Vulture is the main bad guy in this first episode, and it's got a lot of that great Spider-Man.
A lot of people just typically write off the Vulture as being kind of a lame-ish villain.
Yeah.
They go out of their way. I mean, he's pretty creepy in this.
He's a good bad guy.
He's a really good bad guy.
But they also do the thing that Spider-Man has always done, that he sort of pokes fun at him being old or whatever else.
Oh, yeah.
The bit where she uses his graffiti against him I thought was really fun. The art is just really stunning and different. And there's also a bit, she's in a band called the Mary Janes.
Oh, yeah.
And they have just gotten a popular single put out, and there's some stress in the band. So there's a little
bit
of that.
I think they're kind of known as sort of like an internet hit band.
Yeah. So they're... She's doing a little bit of what they're doing over at DC with Batgirl. It's in that same vein.
There's a reason that fan art team up seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
Because there is sort of a link thematically between the books. What's interesting is that we've sort of seen them kind of do these sort of things before, reinvent a character. In this case, it's kind of a weird, well, this is a guy character remapped as a female character.
Yeah.
Is it just a throwaway? And these characters have emerged as very strong characters kind of on their own. I don't feel the weight of an awkward, why can't, you know, they create an original character? Because, you know, and there are original characters like Ms. Marvel coming out too.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what makes it feel a little bit better is that, you know, that they are introducing original ones. But these are some great new characters.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like we're trying to get the Spider-Man people to buy another book.
Right.
This is a book for a different audience. This is a book for people who want a different character. She is barely Spider-Man. She's got the same powers, and there's going to be some of the same villains overlapping. But this is not a Spider-Man riff. This is its own thing.
Like you pointed out, it was literally because fans demanded it.
Yeah.
The humor in it.
And it's funny. It's really nice looking. Dave is correct. Ben Grimm is, in fact, a patrolman in this.
In your face!
So, it's a different... I'm going to be interested in seeing how they build this world, if they're going to do sort of what they did with 2099, where it'll sort of expand out, and there'll be more stuff in this world, or if it'll all be contained in Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You know, Earth 2, also over at DC, kind of ended up doing that. It was its own book, but it also had sort of World's Finest tied into it, and has since done more crossovers. So, yeah, you can play around with this stuff.
Yeah. Last week was a really good week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I almost could have picked, like, several other books for my pick.
So, the other stuff that was on my list was Amazing Spider-Man number 15, which was the end... really was the end of Spider-Verse. We thought last issue was the end.
And I enjoyed it. I think you thought it was a little rushed.
I thought it was a little action-heavy and rushed. This is the epilogue. This is really the finale, and I was very happy with that finale.
Oh, yeah.
Darth Vader number 2, which was every bit as good as the first issue.
Man, Darth Vader just gets to be a badass every issue.
And Dave had a really good point. We were talking about this off mic, that the thing about Darth Vader is, the bad guy he's sort of set against is also a bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the way to do it, is like, you're still rooting for the bad guy, but you're rooting for the fun break the rules bad guy.
Yeah. Bad guy. He's up against kind of an officious a-hole of a bad guy. And you can, it's easy to root against the bureaucrat.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think,
you know, if Vader had been off killing kids, it'd be a little harder.
It's a little harder, yeah. Superior Iron Man number 5, which deals with Teen Abomination, who's a character that, again, they mentioned this is a character that was going to be sort of a throwaway villain.
And I don't even know who that is.
Then they
that
liked him.
Pre-existing
he's,
character?
No, he's the kid that showed up who'd been one of the extremists from Tony because.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they give him a backstory that ties into Tony Stark. And I was like, oh, that's a really good. It was really good. And they talked in letter call about how they're like, this was a throwaway character. And then the more I wrote him, the more I liked him.
Huh.
And it was a really good issue of Spider-Man.
Organically.
Spider-Man 2099 number 9, which is the post Spider-Verse issue where he supposedly gets back to 2099.
Oh, that was a cool issue.
But as you may be able to judge from the cover, and the Maestro doesn't quite make it. And that was really good.
The Hulk future
poor,
imperfect
poor
future.
Miguel.
Chew number 46 starts the new story arc. There was a big thing that happened at the end of the last one that I won't give away, but there's some big stuff going on, and they are closing in on the last two story arcs, I believe. Each story arc is 5 issues, so we're getting close to our finale here. Secret Origins number 10. Had 3 stories in it. The only one I read is the one that caused it to be sold out immediately,
which is
Batgirl.
Batgirl.
And it gives her origin and has some big revelations.
Yep.
Also sold out really quickly. There is also a second printing of that coming the same week Spider-Gwen will be available.
It also confirms that my theory might not be crazy.
It might not be as crazy as we thought.
We'll see.
And speaking of second printings, last week also saw the release of the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 1 second printing, which we all love that book. And if you haven't picked it up, it's worth picking up.
I would also like to give a shout out to Daredevil of last week.
Yes.
If we didn't mention that.
Yep.
That last week was a great week for Mark Waid. And this issue in particular focused on his relationship with
Kirsten.
Kirsten? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the question that always comes up for Matt, which is his girlfriend going to get killed?
Yeah.
But not just that. It's sort of like, in a weird way, this sort of stands in for kind of commitment issues.
Yeah.
And you know, he. The general hero fear of anything happening to a loved one, especially since he is a publicly outed guy.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting twists and turns on that. I don't want to really get too much into it other than
say but I loved
it was a strong take on these questions with the usual mixture of suspense and intrigue and action that you expect from Waid.
Yeah, it was a great issue. It was a new start of a new story arc, or maybe even just a standalone, but it was such a good story. Nick, was there anything else on your list?
Actually, yeah. The only other one I'd probably mention would be the Thor annual,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty cool. It was three different stories in one.
It has a crazy cover on it.
It had several different covers. One was drawn by Rob Guillory, who of Chew.
Yeah.
That has
That's
Thor
the one I'm looking at.
battling a person in a mask that
like a luchador mask.
A luchador mask, and with the title "Who is Loki's mystery wrestler?" Which is obviously the Hulk, but it's a very
what?
Fun
the Hulk. No, it's a different green guy in purple pants.
Sure. I see that for the variant edition symbol in the upper left corner that they use the Thor frog.
Yeah, I also like some of the signs. You know, like Chew, they always hide things, and they're one of the. People in the stands has a sign that says Hammer Time, which I really but you know, 3 different creators, 3 different writers, 3 different artists working on this book. The first one is King Thor, which is written by Jason Aaron, which is a very very good story. I thought it was one of the better ones. And then the second one featured the all new female Thor, sort of how she gets involved with the Warriors 3 and sort of how they are like, you are not Thor, but, and then they kind of give her sort of this challenge, which
I like
is actually
art
pretty.
On that. It has a very, it reminded me in some ways of the Gwen Stacy artist.
Yeah, I can see that.
But also of just, it has a neat animation style.
And the third one is actually written by wrestler CM Punk with art by Rob Guillory.
Yeah.
Which is sort of this drinking game, dealing with, you know, Loki and Mephisto. And it's kind of goofy, but a lot of fun. And all in all, I really do think Jason Aaron is doing a lot of great things for Thor, and Thor has been sort of some of my favorite book.
We were talking about this the other day, is that has Thor, maybe when JMS first took over, this is the highest sales we've ever
seen.
Highest
sales we've seen on Thor, yeah.
The only time I can think of is maybe when JMS came on, and it may still be higher than that for us.
I think it's definitely about that level.
Yeah.
So. All right, there's other stuff this week that were worthy of mention. There were some Image comics that I just haven't gotten around to reading yet, but that's a pretty good overview. Marvel had a great week last week.
Yep.
There's some good stuff coming up this week, and we will talk about that on next week's podcast. And we'll be back in just a few minutes to a few seconds, and we're going to talk about some movies and TV we've been watching. So finally this week, we're going to close out with some TV and movie talk. But before we do that, there's a comic that we've been holding off on talking about because Nick has read all of it.
Yeah, I've read all of it.
Dave read some of it a few weeks ago and got very enthused for it.
But,
and,
you know, we probably mentioned this when it first came out, but we haven't talked about it,
And I finally read it. I finally grabbed all 8 issues plus the annual.
Yep.
And sat down.
Case, we all have
and we all liked it.
Yeah, it's
and
really good.
A Strange Case because it's a DC book, and you all we're all sort of down on DC a little bit right now.
A little bit, yeah.
Not everything, but a lot of it. But the book is Grayson. It is the former Nightwing who is now believed to be dead.
Right, in the, by the general
DC public. But he's alive.
That is to say,
good news.
Not thought of by fans or readers as dead.
We just gave it away.
The only one who knows he's still active is Batman.
And that's because he's undercover for Batman.
He is undercover in Spiral, which is Grant Morrison's crazy idea of a spy of an organization sort of trying to uncover heroes' identities.
Yeah, they're sort of an anti-hero espionage. Like they want to know, and they seem to know who Batman is.
Yeah,
it's pretty big.
Which seems to imply that they would know whoever. If you know who Batman is, you probably figured everybody else, right? I mean, that's really the hardest.
Well, that is
one.
Because one of their agents
is was Dick Grayson. Sure.
And they have the cool, weird spiral blurring effect on their faces. They have is it technology that they use?
It's eye implants called hypnos that basically creates like this wavering effect that no one can see their faces.
Right. If you imagine if you looked at somebody's face and instead saw those features spun into a little blur, like there was a black hole in the center of their face. That's what the spiral, all their agents and stuff look like, and the director.
They can also use the hypnos to sort of influence people's minds, right?
Yes.
Although it's dangerous.
It is very dangerous. It has repercussions on them, especially, I forget, in like certain situations it's dangerous to use.
I believe in the first issue, isn't Dick Grayson, he doesn't use it, and he's talking with Helena Bertinelli, his partner.
Yep.
Codename Matron, we know her as formerly as the previous Huntress.
Yep.
And he says something like, he says he doesn't want to become a two-egg omelet.
Yeah.
I think that was the phrase he used.
Yes.
That he would basically fry the person's brain that he's talking to and his own brain at the same time. Yeah. I thought that was a good way to quickly describe the potential pitfalls.
And that's sort of the big thing about this book is the writing.
Yeah.
And also the speed, the brevity of that is a part of it, too. The book moves at a clip.
It does, but it's Tim Seeley and
Tom King?
Is it Tom King?
Who is a guy who's...
Essentially. And it's them working together, and they're utilizing stuff in the DC that I never would have brought in. I would have, like, because they're using Midnighter.
They're using Midnighter, using him well, and it ties into his original stuff when Warren Ellis created him. His handler is someone called the Gardener.
Yep.
And originally he and Apollo were dealing with this thing called the Garden that was this forbidden technology weapons stuff, and it's based in that.
Tim Seeley's utilizing stuff from that, and he's utilizing things from Grant Morrison's run that he'd enjoyed.
He also mentions Argus, the CIA, and Checkmate, and the happiest moment I had reading this book, or one of the happiest, was they showed like one panel of a mission against Checkmate, and they were wearing the old cool Checkmate uniforms.
That was such a good look.
It was such a good look. And Rucka turned them into sort of more realistic ones I didn't like as well, but they've clearly gone back to the cool ones.
Yeah, that's really good.
But I love the idea of spy games in the DC universe, and that's what this is.
But it's a heightened sort of spy.
Yeah, it is.
What it reminded me of, it was sort of the more outrageous 60s things like the British TV show The Avengers.
Yeah.
Or maybe even like The Prisoner, a little bit of psychedelia mixed in there, but sort of by way of DC stuff.
And this book is not only, action-packed and moves at a great clip, it's funny.
Yeah.
They've
also embraced Dick Grayson as sort of sex symbol. For the longest time, people have been talking about how women in comics are so, outrageously endowed and they're all sexy and it's male empowerment, male power fantasy, that kind of thing. And Dick Grayson is one of those characters who they've decided that for women and gay men, like, he is the guy. He's hot, he's good looking, he's in great shape, and he's got this charming personality.
Right, he doesn't have all the hang-ups Batman does.
Because they do this issue where these like college girls who are being trained by the Matron.
And that's at the school for Morrison used that.
Yeah, it's their school for sort of spies, basically, right? They're training those girls as spies. And they see Dick Grayson out on the campus, and they basically sort of chase him around a bit. It's sort of a Monkeys Beatles kind of thing a little bit. It's a really fun little bit, and I thought that was – it's interesting to acknowledge what a lot of – I mean, he's always been the character that has been sort of a girl crush character.
Right.
And I think that's interesting to sort of acknowledge that.
I think a lot of guys, even heterosexual guys, essentially have man crushes on Dick Grayson.
I think the man crush is usually on Batman.
There's also a great line from Midnighter, which I'm not going to spoil, that's fantastic.
And, none of us really wanted the Wildstorm guys in DC Universe. I like the idea, but nobody's ever done it well, and I think in general it's a mistake. But this was a good way to use Midnighter.
Because truthfully, when I saw Midnighter first, I'm like, Midnighter would punch Dick Grayson and that would be it.
Yeah.
Midnighter was basically like Batman with incredible super strength, and like he had like this computer-like brain or whatever where he could analyze your moves and know what you were going to do before you did it. Yeah. So he would like, in the hyper-violent authority...
Just punch people's heads off.
He would literally punch people's heads off. And I was just like, there's no way. But they're like, no, Dick Grayson is taking on the light. You have tons of guys. He's going to find ways.
And also because they did a great thing where he can sort of change his fighting style.
Yeah.
Because Midnighter studied Nightwing, but he hadn't studied Robin.
Yeah, right. I thought that was fantastic.
So he threw some of his old school Robin moves out and, brought him down, which is very cool.
It's really fun. The art by Mikael Janin is really gorgeous.
They've had a couple other artists step in every once in a while. It's still great stuff.
This does feel of a piece with some of Morrison's stuff, and then occasionally there's something where I'm like, that was weird, why'd that happen? And I think Dave gave me the best advice. He's like, just roll with it. And that is definitely the good advice. There's some stuff where it's like, there's a lot going on, and sometimes there's deeper levels of stuff that I'm like, I'm not sure I'm getting this, but I don't really need to because the story's fun.
Right.
The Spiral is clearly maybe a little bit of a sinister organization.
Yeah.
Because he's working undercover for Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
In this organization for whatever Batman's goals are.
Missions, which I suppose calls to mind the TV show Alias
Sure.
Bit.
Yeah. But also there's a running story, and there have been sort of standalone stories. There was one in the desert. But the running sort of arc is about someone called the Paragon, I think is what they call it, that clearly seems to be was cloned from the Justice League, because they go after someone who has implanted these eyes, let you see all these different things, and they sort of, when they're briefing him on it, they show Aquaman on a screen behind the guy giving the briefing. Sort of they visually cue you in that, oh, this is probably Aquaman's eyes, that's where they got these skills, or...
Right.
The brain, when there's a telepathic brain, it is Martian Manhunter, and that kind of stuff. And,
right.
They reference Superman. Basically, there's this guy. There's these set of seven organs they're trying to reclaim that are all super organs that can be used.
It's a good example of the book's weirdness.
Yeah,
that quirk thing where, you know, when I heard Dick Grayson was going to be doing spy stuff, I think I envisioned kind of, you know, the umpteenth version of something like James Bond.
Sure.
And there's a little James Bond in here, but. What I liked is that it was pretty different, too.
Yeah, this is more wild than James Bond. It's like you say, it's the spy-fi. It's the 60s spy type thing.
Yeah, with a specific flavoring of the DC Universe.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it, and I'm definitely looking forward to reading more. They also did – the annual has that great – sort of Helena Bertinelli, of course, in the DC Universe is from Earth 2.
Yeah.
This one isn't. This is obviously the Earth 1 Helena Bertinelli.
This is Helena Bertinelli.
And they go into her background a little bit in the annual, and I was kind of glad to see them doing that. I thought that was really well done.
I mean, they also did the Future's End story, which a lot of those stories weren't that fantastic.
Yeah.
But the Future's End Grayson story was great.
Yeah.
It's very dark. And it's about to see its first hardcover collection coming up soon.
Yep.
So we'll definitely have that on the shelf.
This is a book that had not been on my radar, and that indeed, because I was like, well, Dick Grayson should be Nightwing. What are they doing here? Now having actually read it, kind of, you know, I needed to read maybe a few issues. I think I tried the first issue when it came out. It just didn't click at the time.
Yeah, me too. I liked it, but didn't love it, and so I didn't follow
it. But now I'm like, oh, okay, I'll buy a hardcover.
Yeah. And for the record, we do still have all the issues except for Future's End. We have the first 8 issues in the annual. Yeah. We only have one of some of them, so if you want these, drop us a line. First person to message us can pick it up. We do have several of issue 1 if you want to sample it.
Yeah.
But I definitely recommend it. It was good fun. Now changing focus to the other media, Nick, you and I both watched a new show on Sunday on Fox. It is from Philip Lord and Christopher Miller.
Yes,
the creators of 21 Jump Street and Lego Movie.
Yep.
And I feel like there's something else that they did.
They're about to do something else. I forget what it is.
These are the guys who have done so many good, weird, quirky. They take projects where you're like, oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
And then they
make it amazing. And Last Man on Earth is very similar. This is the Will Forte from Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
Is the last man on Earth after some kind of plague has wiped out everybody.
Yeah, they don't really dwell on that all that much.
It's a comedy.
It's a 30-minute comedy.
Yeah. And but there's not, like, they don't show, like, there's not bodies everywhere.
No.
And, like, but it seems to have wiped out everything. Like, there's no dogs.
No
there
cats,
is,
no animals.
There is
no,
nothing.
It's just him.
So the opening 5 minutes are him driving around in an RV to various – it just shows an RV driving through various cities. And he's got a loudspeaker, you know, saying, saying, "Hey, is anybody out there?"
Uh-huh. He's on a desperate search to find somebody.
And then he's crossing off on the map all the states. And finally, he's crossed off all, well, I guess 48. He hasn't crossed off Hawaii, presumably.
He couldn't go there.
But and you see him pulling back into Tucson, Arizona, which if I was the last man on Earth, I would not choose to park myself in Tucson, Arizona, even though but that's where he lives.
That's where he lives. That's
and
his
he was,
home.
And he was leaving. He was spraying paint everywhere, saying "Alive in Tucson," so that hopefully someone would find him. And I understand you had to pick somewhere. I might have picked, say, Disneyland, but whatever. Okay, so
hey, don't you? Aren't you the summer forever guy?
Yeah, Disneyland.
Summer.
No, Southern California. Alive in Southern California. You'll find me by one of the pools. And then, so he moves into a mansion that someone had in Tucson, brings his own little decorations, like, say, the rug from the White House.
Yes.
And
a
bunch of paintings, Declaration of Independence, giant
Shades of Zombieland.
A giant, it's a little bit like that. There's a painting that he, like, staples up behind his bed.
Yeah. Right, I heard people talking about this. It'd be like taking the Mona Lisa and stapling it to your wall.
Yes, yes.
Because this is your average guy. I mean, it's
just an average guy. He was a temp.
He was a temp.
He is in no way the last person you want. He's even, like, Yorick Brown in Why the Last Man is at least was an escape artist.
Yeah, he had more to him. This guy is just, he's kind of there.
But I love that. It's so funny. He does, the visual sequences are amazing. They did. He decides to go bowling outdoors.
Yes.
So he sets up a bunch of bowling pins and rolls it, and that's not enough. So then he sets up a bunch of fish tanks.
It's just this progression of insanity.
Then he uses a truck. It's escalating. It's so funny and so weird. And he opens doors, blast doors, with a gun.
Yes.
He just carries a gun around. When he wants to open a door, he shoots the window out and goes in. And it's so casual.
Because, you know, you need to get food. You need to talk to mannequins.
He's so, like, wantonly casually destructive because there's no reason to worry about it.
Right.
And there's sort of a slob thing to it, but it's a very funny. And it's so funny and so – I mean, you can absolutely relate to him. He's like, yeah, there's nobody else around. Do what you want.
Exactly.
It's really, really funny. And then at the end of the first episode – and we have to give it away. It's a spoiler if you haven't seen it. And they've been very good about keeping it quiet.
Oh, God, I didn't know.
But by now it's everywhere. It's on their Facebook and everything.
Yeah.
But at the end, he's about to kill himself because he's talking to all his friends. He's just – his fake friends is all his various balls that he's painted up because he makes fun of Survivor at one point.
No, he makes fun of Castaway.
He makes fun of Castaway. That's it. saying that, he's like nobody's going to talk to a beat of a ball. That's stupid. And then by the end, he's got a retinue of different balls he's painted faces on.
Everything from ping
pong
balls.
He's about to kill himself because he just can't take it anymore. And he sees a fire and he goes out of the fire and he finds what is obviously women's clothing.
Yes.
And in the second episode, they bring in the last woman on Earth.
Correct.
Played by Kristen Schaal.
Which is amazing.
Who's the greatest comedian of our time.
She's awesome. I love Kristen Schaal. And it asks the question of, what if you were the last person on Earth, and then you were found out the other was someone else? How happy would you be? What if you didn't like that person?
It reminds me a lot of, like, The Odd Couple.
It's The Odd Couple set in the post-apocalypse.
Yeah, and I was like, that's genius.
It is. It's genius. And everyone was wondering, how do you do this show? How can you do Last Man on Earth? How do you do an ongoing show? And once they introduced Kristen Schaal's character, I'm like, I get it. This is how you do it.
Yeah, it's set on my DVR to record everything.
Oh, it's so funny. I loved it. I thought it was a great great episode.
Yeah.
Before we change to movies, I want to mention a couple more TV things that I've been watching.
Okay, yeah.
Last Man on Earth is definitely in the early running for best show of 2015. We're early. It's only March.
I was going to say, it's really early.
But last year this time we had True Detective and Fargo.
Right.
Which turned out to be my two best shows last year.
Fargo's coming back,
But best new shows,
Yes.
Last Man on Earth is one of them. The other two are Togetherness on HBO, which is a really good relationship story. It's by the Duplass brothers. It's got Amanda Peet. It's got Melanie Lynskey, who I love. It's really, really good. It's sort of melancholy. It's about sort of, you know, being 10 years into a marriage and not being sure if they both still want that. His buddy's an actor who's a little bit too in shape to be the chubby best friend, but is not in good enough shape to be leading man material. He's trying to make mm-hmm. as an actor. And her sister, who's just been in a series of relationships and has not worked out. And all of them sort of being in this place in life where they're not sure. They're adults, and they're not sure they want to be where they want to be. And it's really good, really funny, really, really sweet and touching. I love that show. It's on HBO. And then there's Better Call Saul, which is the spinoff from Breaking Bad. It's a prequel focusing on Bob Odenkirk's lawyer in this thing, Jimmy McGill, his original name. And I was very skeptical about this show.
Well, I mean, it sounds crazy to do a spinoff of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, one of the best shows of all time.
Yeah, how can you top it?
And especially when you know, like, what the fate of these characters are, like, yeah. you know. But this is going back to his days as a lawyer when he wasn't Saul yet. He was trying to be a good lawyer.
So it's a flashback.
It's a prequel series. Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's a prequel. And it is he's playing his name. You know, Saul is not his real name. He revealed that in Breaking Bad early on.
Uh-huh.
That Saul Goodman is a play on Saul Goodman. His name is Jimmy McGill, and he was sort of a wastrel in Chicago. And he became a lawyer because his older brother is having some medical issues. And it is all about that. And this couple, he's trying to make his law firm work, trying fighting the sort of bigger law firm that used to employ his brother. He gets involved with a criminal. There's a lot of stuff going on. And in this show, I don't just like it. I love this show. It is as good as Breaking Bad. It's as beautiful visually. It's got the same sort of performances, but it's got a different cadence, a different feel than Breaking Bad did. It's definitely a drama, but it's also got some comedic bits to it.
Okay.
It's really great. I expected at best to like this show based on a residual warmth for Breaking Bad, but I love it as its own thing. And you do not have to watch Breaking Bad to enjoy it. There are little nods, little character bits that you'll probably get, especially knowing where the character goes, that you will like those. You'll probably enjoy the show more if you've seen it. But you could definitely just jump in and watch Better Call Saul. And this is my place where I'm going to plug my other podcast, which is to mention that I do a weekly TV podcast called The TV Dudes at tvdudes.net, I think, or tvdudes.com. TheTVDudes.com, that's our place. TheTVDudes.com.
This is the worst plug ever.
if you want to hear more of my ruminations on TV, including Better Call Saul, I'll probably talk about Last Man on Earth this week's show with a couple other friends, that's a good place to go.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to a lot of new TV this week. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
S.H.I.E.L.D.'s coming back
tonight.
Yep.
And then on Thursday, I think American Crime
starts out,
which I'm super excited to see, which looks depressing, but it's
got probably good.
But probably very good.
All right, so then let's talk about some movies. Dave, you went and saw a movie.
Yeah, I saw a crappy movie.
it wasn't terrible, but I saw it's Lazarus Effect, right?
Right. Not Lazarus. That'd be awesome.
You know, but there's a Lazarus comic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean. If it's an adaptation of Lazarus.
I thought you meant biblical Lazarus.
No.
And I was like, yeah, it's probably out there, too. Anyway, a horror movie that sounded kind of fun, a little bit in the vein of the 90s movie Flatliners, in which some like grad students who are doing experiments with biology have found a way to sort of with this chemical process to do a little bit of Frankenstein work, and essentially with test animals they brought them back from the dead. Their goal, which I kind of appreciated early on, is sort of lower, smaller than that. What they're trying to do is increase the amount of time that people who, after they die, the time that there is to revive them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, oh, what if there was a, what if you could, you know, after several hours still revive somebody? That's more, it's more that attainable goal. And they sort of inadvertently cross over into something beyond that. And what happens is, without getting into too many details, is something of a mixture of, creepy on-the-edge science and also some mysticism, too. Long story short, they go too far. They bring somebody back. I won't give you too much of the context, but they bring somebody back, and that person does not seem right. I think in Flatliners, if I'm not mistaken, it was almost more like when you came back, you brought back some of that.
Yeah, it was sort of angst,
I think,
basically.
They sort of coalesced. They brought something, like something that was using their pasts against them.
Yeah. And what's weird is that even that past element is part of this, too, which in a way I think is part of what made it disappointing. The scares in it, there's some decent jump scares and stuff like that, but it's rather familiar scares.
Yeah,
I guess nothing. Almost every... I don't usually think about plot beats in movies if I'm into them. And this one, I was guessing them, and they were all my guesses were right. The scares were always that, you know, the person walks into a darkened room, they look around, they don't see anything, they turn around and the monster is there.
Right.
There's a lot of that.
However, there was a preview before this movie.
I didn't see a trailer for a movie that I have much higher expectations of, also in the horror genre.
And I saw this preview, too, because I too, went to the Draft House, and it's their monthly pick.
Right. Now, is their monthly pick just a random pick, or does that mean, like, it's an independent film?
I think it has
an indie vibe.
I think it's, like, an indie vibe that... I don't know if it's Tim League who picks them.
He does. Is it possible? Are they distributing? Because that Draft House does distribute movies.
It might be one of their distributors, but I know it's coming out, I think, in the next couple of weeks.
The name of this movie is It Follows.
Yes.
Which is a fun-sounding name, by the way.
Yep.
One of the things I've noticed over the last few years is there's a lot of horror movies with titles that are kind of generic, and I confuse all of them because they're so damn generic. So, like, Sinister or Insidious... could describe almost anything.
It's true.
When, in fact, you know, Insidious is essentially a kind of a haunted house story. Mm-hmm. You know, Sinister...
Conjuring.
The Conjuring is the perfect example.
All right. I would like you both to give me better titles for Sinister and Insidious.
Hang on, off the top of my head?
Yes.
This guy's at focus group,
yes.
Randy.
No, I want Sinister's a haunted house story, so I think you should call it The Sinister House That Is Haunted. And Insidious is a...
I think they're both about haunted houses.
You know, Insidious a ghost story?
I would take the address, which probably sounds innocuous, but it would be scary. It'd be like 1300 Lakeline Drive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then and then I would write, oh, right, that's that creepy house thing.
See, because I would have gone with the insidious ghosts who are insidious.
I could see that working in a stupid universe. And if there are infinite alternate universes, there's one where it's everything we have now, but just stupider.
Yes.
And it could fit there.
Yeah. You're saying I should go to that universe?
I'm saying I think you're a transplant from that universe.
However, all that being said...
It follows.
I'm from the stupid verse.
It follows... So Nick, do you want to sort of say what the plot is? It's kind of a spin on it's a sort of a new urban legend.
Yeah, no, I mean, the general sense of the film was that basically you get we saw a main character sort of go on a date, but then all of a sudden she's left in the middle of nowhere, and
the guy tells her something really weird.
Yeah, it's like, you have to see this, I can't describe it, I'm sorry.
Right, and it's almost like, this is kind of creepy, but it's like, is she going to get raped?
Yeah, it almost
looks like he's to a chair.
In the middle of nowhere, it almost looks like he's about to kill her.
Yeah.
But he obviously shows
her
something.
Or performs a ritual. And it means that he was apparently the target of the title. And now she is. And we don't know what it is other than that they say it can appear as anything. It could appear as a stranger, or it could be the person, a best friend.
Yeah.
But it will come to kill you.
It basically is trying to get you... But the cool twist about this one is that once it kills that person, it doesn't stop. It goes to the person previous.
Huh.
And so the notion is you are always passing it.
So right. It's kind of like The Ring.
Sort of like The Ring,
but like, you know, in The Ring, they were able to make a copy of the tape and pass it on, the curse, to somebody else, which was creepy in and of
right.
itself.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But like, once they were done,
they were done, yeah.
Imagine, though, if that person died because of it, if it would then come back for
the next
them.
Person, yeah.
So in other words, you don't want the person, I guess, you give it to die. In a way, you want them to be compelled to do it with somebody else.
Yeah.
So that it keeps on getting passed on. And whoever, you're never one of the links in the chain that it comes from.
But it's weird, because you're never safe. Because you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
right.
you
Even
always...
if you've done it, you could... You, what if that person died and you didn't know it, and
exactly.
now it's come for you?
Yeah.
So it's this bizarre thing. The movie looks very polished, looks very fun. I don't recognize anybody in the movie, so...
You say fun, but it also... To me, did you get that it had sort of an art house vibe to it?
Yeah.
Like a little more...
And when
more
I say fun,
nuanced...
I think it's just sort of a fun movie-going experience, not
right.
sort of like a...
Not
it's, you're right, it's not a, ha-ha, this is going to be so
But
fun.
I suppose not fun like in the way of, like, you know, like a slasher movie, kind of where it's like meant to be kind of outrageous and you
right.
enjoy the kills.
I'm talking about
this
a good...
one is maybe going to have stronger characters.
I think
stuff.
So. I had heard nothing of this. This was the first time I saw the trailer, and I will definitely go see this.
And the quotes attached, you know, a lot of times for horror movies, the quotes are kind of from, you know, Fangoria,
yeah,
or,
yeah,
you know, Harry Knowles at Ain't It Cool News and stuff like that.
Right.
And this, I think, had one or two from that, but there were quotes from Rolling Stone and stuff.
Yeah.
And they weren't, like, quotes that are just like, this is a good, you know, good horror genre movie. They were like, this movie amazed us and stuff like that.
Oh, it kind of sounds interesting to me, and I'm not a big horror guy, yeah, so... Yeah.
So, anyway, definitely on my to-do list. Yes.
So what you would say, Dave, is if you have $10 in your pocket, instead of going to see Lazarus Effect,
just put
that in your pocket until It Follows comes out.
Yes.
Or come to the store and buy something for $10.
That's right. Oh, and then in the time it takes to come out, you will have earned $10
more dollars, yes,
that you can apply to It Follows.
Yes. This may be a weirdly specific review.
Alternately, you could wait a week to see It Follows and come by the store and spend that $10. Then a week later, you will earn another $10 that you can spend on It Follows.
Or whenever you have $10, just come to the store, spend it here, and then eventually it'll be on Netflix, which you have to spend like $10 to get Netflix for the month, and then you can watch It Follows.
But maybe you already have it.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. In which case, you're not really losing anything, and you can come to the store again. What a plan we've discovered.
We should not be movie reviewers.
What else? Well, what are we,
Nick, what else did you see?
Well, I said I went to the Draft House. We've basically flipped a coin, essentially, seeing Lazarus Effect. Or,
you won.
Or this other movie called Focus.
Yeah.
We won.
Yeah.
In the run of those two movies. They really
didn't know
great...
anything about this.
Basically, it's con artists. That's all you need to know.
It's the Will Smith.
Will Smith and Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie. I love that the Draft
House... A.K.A. Deadshot and Harley Quinn.
That's right.
I love that the Draft House sort of presented it with their pre-show with all crime movies. So we got scenes from The Grifters and a few other things that, like, the heist and, you know, all those books.
You know, the Alamo pre-shows, I hate to say it, but have been getting a little bit weak lately.
Not lately. It was like a year ago. They've gotten way better again.
Maybe I've been to Flicks a little bit more often lately, although that's not as much. But I've been surprised that some of the Flicks ones are better, have seemed better.
Yeah.
If Alamo's been improving, that's good. And this sounds like a perfect movie.
Yeah, this one's sort of married. And, you know, Kaylee has not seen a lot of the crime movies, so she was like, I've never seen The Grifters. And I'm like, we'll watch The Grifters.
Noted.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite ones. But basically, this is sort of an upbeat movie starring Will Smith and Margot Robbie. It's got a lot of style and panache.
You say upbeat. Mostly grifter movies are kind of dark.
Yeah, I mean, but it is more flashy, more upbeat. I mean, Will Smith plays...
But they're at odds, right? And they're sort of betrayals and that kind of stuff, right?
No, it is actually a romance.
Oh, okay.
Which is an interesting thing.
Because that's not how the trailers are saying it.
Right. You do have that sort of element in a lot of grifter movies, you know, because, like, John Cusack was enamored with Annette Bening's character and things like that. It's not like that. In Focus, it's much more kind of, they do love each other in a sort of way.
Okay.
But they're both sort of broken people because they are criminals.
You know what this sounds a little like, although this is it's probably an even fluffier version of that same concept. What is the Thomas Crown Affair?
Right.
Which is basically a romantic movie with art thieves and stuff like that. But the consequences don't feel quite too huge, and it's not gritty by any means.
Yeah.
Which is, they actually make a Thomas Crown Affair riff, but not on the remake, the actual original starring Steve McQueen. But no, I actually really liked it. I thought Will Smith did a great job as sort of this kind of mastermind character.
He looked cool in the trailers.
Yeah, I mean, he is cool. I mean, he doesn't break out into a rap, which I was in for.
Where's my focus rap?
Where's my focus rap? But they did play the Wild Wild West song in their pre-show.
Nice.
which I was very happy
this
with.
This reminds me a bit of a side, but we have a playlist here at Store that is a... we all have our individual playlists on Spotify. And then Dave made the all-staff mega mix,
which has like six people's mixes crammed into one.
Yeah. And I was going through just paring down some of the duplicates and discovered that there were three songs in like V to W that had two triple songs in there. Three of us had put their song in there. One of them was Beck. I don't remember one of the other ones, but the other one was Wild Wild West by Will Smith.
So you're saying that has sort of just...
I'm saying it has the rogue stamp of approval.
Nice.
Yes. I believe Randy probably... You I believe, are our old-school Will Smith aficionado.
I like Will Smith. I've never seen an episode. I've never seen 5 minutes of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, well, that's
I guess I should say, not old-school Will Smith aficionado, old-school, what was his rap name?
Fresh Prince.
You're a fan of him as a rapper.
I enjoy his stuff. I'm a fan of him as a rapper and a blockbuster movie star.
Yeah.
I like Independence Day. I like Men in Black.
I don't think there's really anybody who likes. I mean, you have to be pretty hard-hearted to hate Will Smith.
Yeah.
We started doing some of the more, like, 7 pounds and
yeah, I was not as into a lot of that stuff.
Pursuit of Happiness. I
like him as an action star, which is why I'm okay with him as Deadshot. I feel like that's in his wheelhouse.
But I believe you sold me on the notion of I've enjoyed Will Smith's raps and stuff, and first on a schlocky level, and then on a genuine level.
Yeah,
but always a little bit on.
There's
a
little bit of irony to my enjoyment of it. Yes. Yeah.
But the Wild Wild West is a fantastic cheesy track.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, Men in Black is great. Any given Will Smith movie song is going to be a good time.
Yep.
Which Focus did not have one, which I was sad.
So we'll make one for you.
Nonetheless,
Nick, drop a beat.
If you're in the mood for sort of a lighthearted crime movie, I know that's weird, but lighthearted con man movie. Sort of in the vein of like Thomas Crown Affair, I think that's
a good.
And
even like, you know,
Out of Sight.
Of Sight. That's a good one as well.
Not To Catch a Thief, although maybe that is. But there's
There's the Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can.
There's you can definitely do lighter hearted.
Yeah, had one that I'm blanking on.
To Catch a Thief
is
the one with the.
But there was another one. Yeah. There was another one too that involved art theft in the 60s, and I think. Oh, who's the My Fair Lady?
Eliza Doolittle.
Who is the actress who portrayed Eliza Doolittle?
I don't know.
Audrey Hepburn, I thought was in it, but I'm just blanking on it. We'll look
at that. Oh, no, Charade.
Charade.
Yeah.
And Charade is a light but very fun movie that also has theft.
I think all of these actually fit in with the theme of Focus, and I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
Cool. Sounds like fun. Definitely better than Lazarus Effect.
Yes. But not as good as It Follows the Trailer.
Yes. But it's another movie you could wait for Netflix on if you wanted to spend more time in the store. Do we have anything else?
That closes us out for this week. Next week we'll be back with hopefully comics for 2 weeks worth of. Or what it will be an extended rant about UPS. So tune in for that. Until next time.
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.